There are changes afoot in the Python packaging world. Brett Cannon agreed to come on the show again and talk with me about Python packaging, PyProject TOML, and more. We talk about some of the upcoming work on Python packaging, such as editable installs and standardization around that, how other tools use the PyProject.toml file for configuration, and then we go off on tangents and talk about things like why it's good to have packages like pip, toml, setup tools, and wheel, etc., not part of the standard library. And maybe we should remove some other stuff from the standard library. And, how come we only can use unit test for testing standard library stuff? And even, why do we call it CPython and not C++ Python? And lots more. I always learn a lot when I talk with Brett. Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions, and that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics.
So there's stuff going on with PyProject.toml.
There's a lot of stuff going on with just packages, period. But yes, there's stuff going on with PyProject.toml.
And packages, period?
Yeah, there's stuff going on in the packaging ecosystem.
Well, let's start with the TOML stuff and in place installs or what do they call those?
Editable installs.
Editable installs. Mm. Is that going to happen?
In what way? You mean editable installs working with PyProject.toml and all that stuff?
Yeah.
So to be totally clear here, the concept of editable installs is actually a setup tools concept. There is no spec or standard backing them up at all. It's just a concept that setup tools came up with back in the egg days. For those of you who don't know what Brian and I are talking about, editable installs basically from setup tools will drop a .pth file and an egg.info directory into your site packages so that you can edit the source code of your project in place and then have it show up as if it had been installed specifically. And the deal is because it's a setup tools concept, there is no direct support for it anywhere in the packaging ecosystem. Now, right now, literally today, there's a thread going on right now about what standardizing editable installs would look like. And there's movement on it even today discussing what such a standard would have to look like to make that work. Because at least on the pip side of the packaging ecosystem, we're making a big push right now to try to make the whole packaging ecosystem run off of standards. Because for the longest time, right, everything was just disutils or just setup tools. And it was just however setup tools did it, yeah, which was never specified, right? So like you never knew if you were really breaking anything because, I mean, setup tools is a great project and we appreciate the hard work they put in, but they didn't write everything. They haven't written everything down and they never will. It's just way too big of a project and they have other things to worry about. So there's no way to tell Flit, hey, this is the way it should work, because the answer has historically just been however setup tools did it. And it's like, well, how's that? And you have to just kind of figure it out and just reverse engineer it and hope you reverse engineer it in a way that people agree that that's the way it should be. So as part of that, we're trying to move towards standards. But because editable installs are used enough, what's happened is build tools like Flit and such will create stub setup.py files so that you can still use setup tools to kind of fake out the editable install for you, even if you use a different build tool. And that's basically all I think you're alluding to, because this is all coming off of that big Twitter thread in my blog post.
Right? Yeah, and I was confused, actually, because I don't – so like – okay, so normally I can say if I just go to, if I'm working on a project, like I clone it or something, and I just want to, I want to use it as if it was installed. Like there's, like for instance, if there's a command line tool or something that I want to use, I can just say pip install dash I and then like dot for the current directory. Mm-hmm. And the dash I says in place install. Mm-hmm. And that work, and it actually, if I just do not without the I, if I just do the dot, it installs this current directory anyway. Mm-hmm. And that works even with Flit.
Yes.
But it's the, but if you edit, it doesn't make changes. So I'm not sure. I think, I don't actually know what happens under the hood. If it builds the thing and then copies it to the directory or something.
Exactly.
Okay.
Pip is building the wheel behind the scenes and then installing the wheel.
Oh, okay. But the Flit has an option to do, like you can do a Flit install with I can't remember the flags. It's either a PTH file or dash S for the symbolic links or something. Uh-huh. So you can either, and I don't really know what it's doing. It looks like it's just copying your project directory to, or a link from your project directory to the setup directory or something.
Yeah, most tools either figure out where your code exists and then create a symlink. So Flit could easily be going like, okay, so Brian has this project called Spam. It's in a source directory because everyone knows Brian loves source directories. So what it would do is it would symlink /src/spam into your site packages directory as Spam. And then that way, all it has to do technically really to look like an editable install is create the .dist info directory, which contains all the metadata for an install package. And then to Python and all the other tools in the world, it just looks like any other installed project.
Okay.
But you can edit the source code because it's literally just a symlink away. The other way to do this is with PTH files, which is short for path. And what you can do with, PTH files is you can specify, you can stick them in your site packages directory, and any line in a PTH file that is not a comment or starts with import will be added onto your sys.path. So what you can do is you could drop a spam.pth file in your site packages and have that just point back to your src/spam directory. And then it would just stick that onto your sys.path. Or actually, you'd probably just put src. And then that way, when sys.path hits your SRC, it's going to know spam's there, and then it can just directly import it. And then once again, you can just edit it in place, and then the install won't look any different because that PTH file is what's causing Python to look over there.
Okay.
The deal with all this, as I said, is none of this is standardized. There's no standard how does pip or how does Flit specify how any of this works. It's all just based on just old practice of setup tools, and that's okay. What we're hoping to eventually solve when someone has enough time to do it is what's the standard for this? What's the specification?
Okay. But if I want it, so this trick of doing a stub setup.cfg file or something.
Setup.py. Yep.
Stub setup.py. Why would I do that? Is it so that I can do pip install.i-i instead of Flit install, or?
Yeah, it depends on the tool. Basically, so where all this is coming from, just so everyone has background, is if you use a pyproject.toml file to specify your build tool, you technically do not need a setup.py file, even if you're a
user. Got it.
So if you, in your pyproject.toml, specify that setup tools is your build tool, and you specify the line that tells your build tool how to run setup tools, that's all that's necessary to build a wheel using setup tools and a pyproject.toml file. So that means you don't need a setup.py, right? If you have a setup.cfg, setup tools knows how to get all the details from there, period. So you can actually dish that setup.py file.
Okay.
Except when you want to do editable installs. That concept is so specific to setup.py files and setup tools that you need this little shim of a setup.py file that literally is no is like nothing. It's literally, I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's import setup tools, setup tools dot setup, and that is it. And then setup tools itself will just go, oh, okay, I'm going to look for the setup.cfg. Oh, I found it. I'll parse it. I got all my information. Now I can do whatever I need. But that whole idea of doing an editable install tools like pip and stuff just assume it needs a setup.py file, and it's going to be setup.py dash run with, I think, dash dash develop is the flag. And so that's why it exists, is purely because all the tools just assume that if you say, give me an editable install of my project, it's going to be setup.py dash dash develop.
Okay.
And that's the entire reason that file needs to exist. Even if you have all of your details in setup.cfg, this is why Flit passes one around as well. It's basically backwards compatibility with tools that just completely assume that setup tools is what you're using.
Okay.
And specifically for editable installs.
And there's a way to do this hack with Flit as well?
Flit does it for you automatically. When you generate your sdist, it actually tosses it in for you.
Okay. Would I do a Flit build or something like that? It'll...
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Okay, cool. Okay, so there's discussion around what, basically, if we support setup editable installs, how, and is just not supporting them an option still, or do you think they'll happen eventually?
I think it'll happen eventually. It's basically too convenient not to. Right. I mean, the discussion has been going on fits and starts at PyCon 2019. At the packaging summit during the sprints, the topic came up. A sketch was developed, and basically the thing was, someone has to take the time to create a proof of concept. Some build tool has to support the concept, the idea of what it'll take to do an editable install, and then that's a backend tool, and then we need a front end tool like pip to try to use the backend tool's proof of concept implementation to verify that this is a reasonable standard, that there's nothing fishy or we're missing big holes or we have some blind spot we're not aware of. And so what happened is I think literally, at least on my reading today, may have happened yesterday, I don't know. Finally, I think everyone got all the details pulled together in one spot, and now we're just hoping some of the people interested are going to have the time to sit down and take one of the build tools. Like, I think Daniel Holth is talking about maybe trying to update Ensconce, for instance, to support editable installs. Basically, as soon as one person does it, we can then hack together. One of the pip developers can hack up pip to try to use this new API and see if it works. And if it works, then we'll write up a pip. We'll put it forward. It'll probably get accepted because the whole packaging community is working on it together. And then we'll just have a standard. And then all the tools can end up growing editable install support naturally and not have to have this little weird shim anymore.
There's still quite a few tools that you cannot put your configuration in a PyProject.toml file.
There's a funny history about that. So when I co-authored pip 518, which standardized PyProject.toml and how to specify the build tools necessary to build your project, we explicitly forbade other tools from using it.
Well, that was your problem.
Yeah, I know. So we did it, and then obviously people ignored it. Yeah. Pretty quickly, because I think everyone realized it was really convenient suddenly having a single file to store all your project's specific configurations. And it made sense. It's just basically what we wanted to do was we wanted to start slow. I mean, and the idea came up. It's just standards are hard enough as it is, but trying to be too flexible at the get-go without having good insight as to where things are going to go leads to trouble, right? Like, perfect example in Python is our transition from Python 2 to 3, right? Like, we thought the transition would not be nearly as bad because we honestly thought people's code had a clear separation between textual and binary data. So we didn't think it would be so hard for people to make the transition and clean up their we didn't think there'd be much code cleanup for people to try to get a very clear distinction between what was binary data to them and textual data. But because we didn't have insight into other people's code bases, we're going off an assumption. And it turned out to be wrong. People's codes were not that clearly separated. And for people who did not have as clear of a separation, the transition was much harder. Yeah. So having learned that lesson, we try to, when we do standards now, be very tightly scoped and focused and restrictive, because it's much easier to add things later than to take things back.
Yeah.
And so in this case, we say, like, okay, instead of getting it wrong and wanting to take back the fact that other tools can use PyProject.toml, we said, all right, we're just going to start with no one using it for that. It's just for us and for packaging builds. No one else can use it. People completely ignored it. And then we quickly realized, okay, you know what? It's fine. Other tools are using it, and it works out great. And so we actually updated the pip. I can't remember when. And luckily we marked it provisional, so it was totally cool to update. We actually marked it final, I think last month. Someone just asked, why is it still provisional? And it's like, honestly, no one thought to bother to make it not provisional anymore. Because it was one of those things, we did provisional on purpose initially, and then we preferred to sit on it until we got it locked down, and we're not tweaking it at this point.
Well, like for instance, like black, I think it's the only way to configure black.
Black is the only, yes, black is one of the common tools that trips people up when they suddenly opt into PyProject.toml and isolated builds. So for people who don't know, PyProject.toml originally was a file to specify your build dependencies, right? It was just to be able to say, I use setup tools and wheel to build a wheel, or I use flit or whatever. It was the way to tell a tool like pip, this is what you're going to have to install somewhere in order for you to build me as a wheel. Straightforward. PEP 5.1.7 then brought in the concept of specifying the API necessary to actually run the build tool. So 5.1.8 said, here's the file. Here's how you specify I need flit. 5.1.7 says, okay, here's how you say how to run flit, how to tell pip how to run flit. Now, the deal is because we are installing build tools now, we have to build your code in isolation, because otherwise we end up back in a situation of people are installing stuff into their global install, right? You should not be installing flit into your global install of Python just to build one of your projects. It should be a per project thing, especially if you're specifying different build tool versions, right? Once again, you may not have updated. So if you're doing that, what that means is that you're going to need to build in isolation. You need to build in a virtual environment. And so what pip did when they designed their support for pip 5.1.7 and 5.1.8 was, okay, if a pyproject.toml exists,
yes,
we're going to do an isolated build of your project, which sounds fine, but people have some really hacked up setup .py files that are not designed to run in isolation. Like, they make massive assumptions that it's running straight from a Git repo and has not been moved and all these other things, and things just fall over. And it made sense when they started it, because remember, 5.1.8 did not let other tools do it. It was purely, you only had this file if you were doing builds. It was only for specifying build stuff. But when all the other tools started to use it, it suddenly became a bit more than just a build tool thing. It just became a project configuration file that's also used for building. So because of that, it no longer acted as a flag. And so that tripped a lot of people up, especially when popular projects like Black now, for instance, only has that, which I personally think is great, because what it means is people forget, like people complain like, oh my God, Black only uses PyProject.toml. Realize that if it didn't do that, you'd have yet another configuration file somewhere in your project just for Black, which I think we all agree is a good thing to have less of.
Yeah. Or if you want to, but, or just don't configure it.
Yeah, or just exactly. I don't even configure Black. I just run Black and I just don't care anymore. But that tripped a lot of people up, is because pip decided to use PyProject.toml as a sentinel to flag build isolation as pip 5.1.7 requires, things started to fall over and people just weren't quite expecting that.
Okay. Now, is there a toml parser in the standard library?
No.
Okay. So that, I think that's one of the reasons why some projects don't want to support PyProject.toml, because it just has yet another dependency that they need to bring in.
Well, so it's funny, right? So, okay. So there's a couple points on this. One is the reason there is no toml parser in the Python standard library is toml has not reached version 1 yet. So as we all know, anything that ends up in the standard library doesn't really get to evolve anymore. Right, because there's backwards compatibility guarantees, and we don't want to break people and all that stuff. Even at an annual release cadence that we have now for Python, we don't want to break people. So the idea that suddenly you have a toml file, and let's say toml's at, I think, 0.5 right now, and they're about to hit 1. I think they released 1.0 RC recently. I also mentioned Predune, one of the maintainers of pip, is actually one of the maintainers of toml. So that helps a lot. Okay. But the deal is, because it wasn't at 1 when we chose it, we didn't want to put something in the standard library, because if the toml file format changed in some way that broke things, and the usage we had in 5.1.8 was very basic. So it was not going to break due to any of the pips we wrote. But if you were using it for who knows what, and something broke, suddenly everyone's going to go, well, you're not following the version one spec. It's like, okay, so we update, but now suddenly broke people. So we couldn't do it until it hits 1.0. So that's the main reason it hasn't gotten in yet. The other thing is you hear people go like, oh, well, I can't do this without something in the standard library, or I'm going to have to vendor it. Well, so the funny thing is everyone says, oh, one more dependency, but don't you already have more than one dependency in your project? So why is this one little dependency such a hang up for people? It's not like TOML parsers are huge. This is not like you're downloading TensorFlow, right? Which is like, I think a couple hundred megs. It's funny. And I know it's a psychological thing, but it's funny when you say, oh, one more thing for, I guess, because it's configuration or something. It's like, why is this not in the standard library? It makes sense to me to be in the standard library. It's like, well, it's not. It's like, oh, well, then I don't want to use it because I don't want to have one more dependency. But I'm willing to bet almost everyone who says that has at least five dependencies, whether they download it dynamically or they vendored it like pip or who knows what. Like pips, like for instance, the pip developers, fine. They didn't care. They vendored the TOML parser. It was not a big deal. Yeah. It's just there. Poetry, they wrote their own TOML parser. They have one called TOMLKit, which was designed such that you can update a TOML file and not change the formatting. So, like, if you run Poetry and it's a Poetry install and you specify a new dependency, it'll actually only add that new line and won't reformat everything.
Yeah.
So it's worked out. It's been fine. It's just you do run into people like that, though. And I mean, I get the idea. It's like, oh God, one more thing. Why can't the standard library just have it? Well, do realize that basically what you're asking is, I own the TOML parser, right? This is not a freebie thing. It's a freebie to you because it's one less line in your configuration file. But that's another thing for me and the core dev team to maintain. So it's free from a certain perspective, but it's not free from another perspective. And once again, once it's in the standard library, it ain't changing because the risk of breaking people is way too high.
Really?
So having it outside the standard library makes it a lot easier to maintain, to evolve and get to where we want. Now, that's not saying we won't end up there. It's just, at least from my personal view, it's one of these funny things when people said, oh God, I can't use TOML till it's in the standard lib. It's like, I'm willing to bet you've got other stuff in there. So.
What is it? Okay, I get that. But it is interesting to me that I can't package Python without installing extra stuff.
Well, you can't. Well, what do you use to package Python? What do you use to package your stuff?
Well, now I use Flit, but okay.
Setup tools isn't in the library either.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying is, and it always surprised me. I was like, why not? Why isn't setup tools in standard library?
We'll look at it this way. If setup tools had been in the standard library, do you think any of the changes that have been made, like setup.cfg or anything, would have happened? I mean, distutils is the perfect example. We're actually trying to get distutils out of the standard library because it can't evolve. We can't touch it because we'll break people. Okay. So we're actually trying to get distutils out of the standard library and just part of setup tools so that it can actually have bugs fixed and things changed to be more sane because we're too scared of breaking the world if we change anything in there.
Yeah. Actually, that makes sense. And we're not talking about this specifically, but I think you were on a Python Bytes where we talked about the splitting up of basically whether or not the standard library should be a lot smaller than it is now.
Yeah, it's a question we've not had on the core team. Well, I take that back. We've had it many times. We've never finished the conversation. It's a hot topic for a lot of people, right? Like, it's one of the things where people go like, I would love to have this in the standard library. And you go, okay, why? A lot of the time is either I think it's my project and I think it's great and I think the whole world should have it, which is fine, but that's not a reason to put it in. Or someone goes, I think this is fundamental to coding. And at least half the time we have to say, actually, no, it's not. If you look at the majority of Python developers, they will never need this. Now, other times it's like, this is extremely niche, but extremely difficult to get right cross-platform, like the OS module, for instance. That's really hard to do right. So it's in the standard library because it evolved over years and years. But a lot of the reason the standard library exists is because it predates everyone having the internet, right? Yeah. Like, Python came out in February of 1991. It predates Linux, for God's sakes, being public. It's one of these things where people don't realize that it predates graphical browsers. Like, one of the I don't know how many people know this, but one of the first GUI browsers was almost written in Python. Gradle, actually. So it's one of these weird things where it's people. The reason we have the standard lib was because Python predates the internet in that regard, and the World Wide Web, and it's that kind of structure. Now that we have pip and PyPI to what it's at, would we, if we were doing the standard library again, would we still have it the size it is? Would we have it be smaller? Would we have it even be larger? Would we do a sumo release that some people have talked about and have it contain a whole bunch of things? I don't know. But this is one of those things where now that we have a steering council, I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to have reckoning sounds way too negative, but we're probably going to finally have this conversation and really try to hash out what is the standard library? What is its goal? How do we want to maintain it? Where do we want it to go? Especially now that Python 2 is done, right? Because a lot of the stuff we've kept around for a long time was specifically so we didn't break people doing transition 2 to 3 code. Now that we don't have to worry about Python 2 code anymore, there's a bunch of modules we can drop. Like Christian Hines has a whole list of modules we could probably stand to deprecate and just get rid of. And it's very conservative. So past that, the question becomes, what should the barrier of entry to be? Should we even have a standard library? Should we just have a things we consider so important the Python core team maintains it, but we still ship on pip and you install it that way, and we just kind of have a sumo-like release? It's tough because we also have people come and tell us like, hey, getting any IP outside of my project, outside of my company is really hard. So having the standard library helps a lot because when Python's installed, I can get the lawyers to okay Python and everything that comes with it, and that's it. So if we strip it out, suddenly they can't install anything and get anything done because they have to get approval for all those little things. Yeah. So it's really complicated.
Yeah, or there could be like a layered thing. Like I don't really think of – I mean, things have changed recently, but C++ isn't just C++. It's the code plus standard template library and some other stuff that really aren't part of the language, but you mm-hmm. kind of use them together. So mm-hmm. there could be like, oh, well, there's the web stuff that you add or the data stuff, or there's other stuff in a blessed package or set of packages or something.
Maybe.
But having the core small, but it is interesting to talk about. I was just thinking Python has batteries included, even the dead ones.
Yeah, exactly. So. Right. It's like, I mean, another really good example of this is look at CircuitPython.
Yeah.
You're running stuff on a little IoT device that we were given at PyCon. Fantastic. Does it really need to have the CGI module? No. Right. I mean, exactly. Does it need to be running PyDoc? I mean, it's this kind of things that you just don't stop. I mean, I had a really crazy I made a very outlandish comment on Twitter one day, and some people really one person took me to task on because they really disagreed. But honestly, does Python need a REPL?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that could be an add-on.
Yeah, right? Like, the Python language does not require a REPL. Now, that's not saying it's extremely useful and that Python's popularity isn't at least partly due to having the REPL to make it very accessible, but that's not really part of the definition of what Python is.
Well, right. And if so, one of the packaging or application packaging ideas is to just package Python with your application and send it to your user in various ways. And if the language itself was a lot smaller because it had most of the standard library ripped out, and you only package the stuff you needed, those would be smaller images, you know?
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's no good answer, and I don't have one. just to be very clear here, I don't want anyone reading into this that Brett Cannon of the Steering Council said we should get rid of the standard library. I mean, that's not what I'm saying here. I don't want anyone to take any of this out of context.
You heard it here the first.
Yeah, right.
Brett Cannon says that we should rip out the standard.
But this is the things we grapple with whenever this topic comes up is like, where are the lines? Where is reasonable? And the problem is this is all extremely subjective.
Yeah.
No one has good numbers of like, what modules are people actually using? And are they using enough to justify keeping it in the standard library? Does it make sense? Is stuff evolving fast enough? Like another good example, why are people complaining about, why are people not going like, well, I'm not going to use HTTPX or requests or any other client-side networking library to download something, right? I'm only going to use URLLib. Huh. No one says that. Everyone uses requests.
Yeah.
Right? Or they use HTTPX, which and if people don't know HTTPX, it's very good. I do recommend people check it out. It has full async support. It's awesome. Anyway.
Well, there's the other
but people still, but my point is everyone's happy to download that and make that a dependency. And yet some people get a little cranky over not having a TOML parser of all things. It's just it's funny how everyone's delineation of what is and is not acceptable varies from person to person. And it's part of what makes this such a tough conversation to have.
Yeah. Well, so one of the reasons I heard that unit test is in the standard library was because you want to use it to test the rest of the standard library.
I don't know the history. Unit test predates me becoming a core developer, but that is definitely the key use case now is unit test is in this. We use unit test to test Python.
Yeah. So is it – so one of the – yeah. So is that true then that you – like all testing, you can't use extra stuff like
– We try not to.
Okay.
Basically, we've tried to make sure that the test suite for Python works completely from a checkout, and all you really need is a compliant C99 parser, and you don't even need a completely C99 compliant parser. You need a parser that implements all of C89 and some selective parts of C99, and that should be it. And then the autoconf tool, so you got to be able to run make. But that's all that's required to build CPython. There's some extra tests that have optional bits for, I think, some external things. I can't remember what they are. But the vast majority of all the tests don't require anything outside of a source checkout.
Yeah. So, like, you can't use Hypothesis, for instance.
No, although the team made a presentation at the Language Summit the other week about potentially using Hypothesis to do some testing on Python.
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, they made it. I personally think they made a compelling use case. But once again, it brings up the question of, okay, does it make sense to have Python's test suite, and specifically CPython's test suite, depend on something that's not in the standard library? How would that work? How do we manage that? Do we somehow have to bundle it in and check it into the source repo? Do we have to do like an ensure hypothesis thing? And if those tests, if it's not installed, we just skip the tests. Where do we do it in a whole separate repo? And it's kind of more of just a, yeah, these tests exist and they're over there, but it's kind of a
just run in CI sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a separate repo designed for different things and different requirements, and it's just all kind of run in a different way and just kind of an isolated incident.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Once again, that discussion just happened. When was that? Was Language Summit last week? I think it was last week. Maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks ago. So okay. It was a fairly recent idea.
So now that I'm thinking about the CPython a little bit, do you know why CPython is CPython and not like C++ Python? I mean,
So it's CPython because Guido likes C and not C++.
Okay.
It will totally work with C++. We have all the proper extern C header stuff that are gated appropriately in .h files so that you can totally embed CPython in a C++ application. So that's not a problem. But you also have to remember Guido started this back in 1989. C was a lot older than C++ at that point. And I think, honestly, Guido just preferred C.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious about that because even my C code that looks like C is running on a C++ compiler. So, but anyway, cool. Well, thanks for letting me pick your brain on all this stuff.
Of course, anytime.
And we'll talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later.
Cool. Thank you for listening to Testing Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.